Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Dion Nicholas, who is the founder of Forethought. Hi, Dion. How are you doing?
Hi, Adrian. I am doing well. How are you doing today?
I am splendid, sir. I'm very, very well. So, Dion, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and also the work that you do, just as a give us a bit of background for the benefit of our listeners and readers?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. I'm Dion, the founder of Forethought. Forethought is an AI company. We were founded about 2 years ago on a mission to help anyone be a genius at their job. So what we do is we build AI tools that basically index information within an organization and then deliver information to employees when they need it. And we're starting first and foremost with the customer support agent. So we'll integrate with their help desk, such as Salesforce Service Cloud, a Zendesk, or any other kind of help desk system. And then we'll help them route and triage tickets, as well as give them suggested answers to help them close questions up to, 20 or 30% more efficiently.
Perfect. Now, you, as you say, Forethought is a pretty new kind of company. And I mean, I was doing a bit of research, and I was speaking to one of your colleagues about the background to it. And the thing that really struck me was that there's an interesting backstory to how, which requires, when I first read it, I thought that sounds like cheating, but it's not. It's actually being really smart. when it talks about you being at college and reading textbooks and things. And I thought that was a really interesting backstory around how you kind of like, almost like learn how to apply some of the stuff that you're doing now to kind of when you were studying. So can you tell me the backstory?
It is a funny story. So when I was in school, actually, this was in high school, actually. I don't mention that much, but it was in high school. So I've always been a math and computers guy. And when I was in high school, I interned at the local university. So I was in Edmonton, Alberta. There's the University of Alberta there, and I was an intern there. I actually interned in their machine learning department. So that was really how I got started, really just learning about artificial intelligence, machine learning. I knew how to program. I had started learning about machine learning, was pretty decent at math and computers. But there was one class that actually always got me, and it was history class. Right. So with history, with history, there's a lot of like trying to understand facts, trying to remember details. And I found for me, just like, it was super hard to just like remember things and just kind of keep information in my own head. Mm-hmm. And so with the tools that I had, basically, I knew how to program, I knew artificial intelligence. What I did was I built an AI that would read my notes and quiz me on the material. Think of this as like a way to auto-generate cue cards based on notes that I was already taking or textbooks I was already reading. And that was my real like first foray into building anything artificial intelligence related. And since then, I've really just been obsessed with this idea of how AI can help anyone become smarter at what they do. I got through history class, by the way, which is great. fast forward many years, I continued to study AI, continued to study natural language understanding, because this thing that I built to help myself in high school, I thought, like there might be broader applications at work or anywhere. And so eventually, as an engineer, I ended up working at companies like Facebook, Palantir, Dropbox and Pure Storage. But anytime I was ramping up on a new project, I realized, you know, cognitively would have the same problem. Hey, it's really hard to just figure things out when you're starting a new project. And in the workplace, most of the information is scattered across the enterprise or stuck in people's brains. Mm. And so it was even more difficult to figure out what I needed to get started on new projects as an engineer. And so I really kept coming back to this idea of, is there a way to just build something that can help me in my workflow and help others become smarter? And so that was really the genesis of Forethought. And so eventually in 2017, I co-founded Forethought with my two co-founders, Sammy Ghosh and Colm Doyle. And we really thought about this idea of building a tool that can index natural language information and help employees. And then it was just a matter of who needs the most help. And so we started talking to folks in IT, customer support, HR, engineering. And more we started thinking about this whole customer experience world. Mm. Customer experience and customer support agents were, you know, they're answering dozens of questions per day. They're often not getting much love, both from the tech stack as well as from the customers themselves. And yet they're kind of the unsung heroes of the enterprise. And so we just started spending a lot of time there and building tools for the agents. And that was eventually what led to Forethought and our initial product, Agatha.
Wow, that's cool. I mean, I like the application. And then you sort of fast forward and you say you just started it. But actually in between kind of like the high school and interning at the university kind of a machine learning kind of like lab and kind of now and these new products, which we'll come back to. I mean, you've just won or recently won TechCrunch kind of Disrupt, which sort of feels a little bit like America's Got Talent for the technology industry, right?
Yeah, that's a pretty good way of describing it.
I mean, what was that like? I mean, it's like, do you have to get up and do a dance or is it just like, is it literally just competitive pitching?
No, that's, I love the way you describe that, Adrian. So yeah, we founded Forethought in September 2017, and we were in stealth for about a year until September 2018 when we launched. It was pretty much right around a year ago, we launched at TechCrunch Disrupt. So they have this battlefield competition, which is effectively, they take the, you know, top 25 startups out of thousands of applicants. And it really is this pitch competition, a song and dance, so to speak, where you pitch in front of judges. And if you make it, you'll make it to the final round. The top five teams make it to the final round. And then you go on the next day and then you pitch again to a new panel of judges. It's a pitch competition. It's a lot like, I don't know, Shark Tank or any of those. You know, it was a lot of prep, a lot of practice. So, you know, getting our pitch down, my co-founders and I prepared our demo, prepared our product, and then most importantly, actually preparing the business, so to speak. So what I mean by that is in May of 2018, when we found out we had gotten into Disrupt and we had to launch about 3 to 4 months later, again, we had only been in existence as a company for a few months, maybe 6 to 8 months at that point. And so we had just launched our first paid pilot customer. We had just, you know, kind of built our MVP and all of those things. And so in between May and September, like we effectively made a decision internally that launching on stage at this, you know, really prestigious pitch competition only mattered if our business was ready. And so we decided to focus in between then, not only on prepping, you know, the pitch about the business and all the other things, but also just making sure we went to market very quickly and ramped up our beta and pilot customers as quickly as possible. So we went from having, you know, just one paid pilot customer to 5 or 6 with the first few starting to convert to annual contracts. So that period kind of prepping for Disrupt also really leveled up our business overall, where we started to look like, I would say, a real product and a real business.
Wow. That's great. And now, I know that at TechCrunch, you were, correct me if I'm right on this, that you were leading with the product, which is Agatha Answers. But right now, you're just kind of launching a new product, which is like a build on that, which is called Agatha Prediction. Is that right?
Yes, correct.
And so what are the difference between the two of those new kind of products? Because I think that's going to explain a little bit about the evolution, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. So we started by launching Agatha Answers, which is a tool that basically embeds into the agent's workflow and helps them answer questions more efficiently. So Agatha Answers will, you know, give them a search bar so that they can quickly search across all of the data sources we've indexed. We'll also even suggest answers or forethink, so to speak, and give full sentence cohesive answers to the agent that might solve the customer's problem. Right. And so ultimately, it's about taking your new agents or taking all of your agents and making them operate like super agents. And so the goal of that product is to be a companion for the agent themselves. And what we learned over the past year was that even before a ticket gets to an agent, figuring out which agent should respond to the ticket, figuring out if it's a high priority or low priority ticket, and really just understanding different kind of metadata about the ticket was actually another hard problem. Mm-hmm. Teams were having their admins or their best agents focused on this triaging problem in order to just get tickets to the right agents. And so we spoke to our customers and we ended up developing Agatha Predictions, which is, again, this companion product, which handles that front end of the stack. So before a ticket even gets to an agent, how do we classify it? How do we decide if it's high priority, low priority? How do we decide which team should respond to it or which agent? And really just get your smartest agents back to answering questions. And then, so that's what Agatha Predictions does. And then that allows agents to spend more time actually answering questions and then hopefully using Agatha Answers as their companion tool there.
Right. But I think the thing is that, so thank you for that. But the thing that I think that's interesting and different about all this and I think is that because you talked about, you alluded to it before, you talked about using an NLU, so natural language understanding approach, rather than the much more widely NLP, or sort of natural language processing approach. Is that right? Because NLU is also kind of that kind of like hard AI problem, sort of like sort of bucket. And so that's kind of interesting because that feels to me like there's not a lot of people talking about NLU, and a lot of people are in that sort of NLP sort of bucket right now. But you've taken that sort of that hard AI approach to that. So that's kind of, for me, that just feels different. So what is the main difference between NLU and NLP?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really great and really pertinent question. So NLP, I would say, is largely the category of tools used to just kind of literally process English language. So what I mean by that is little heuristics to figure out things like, okay, is this a noun? Is this a verb? There's been a class of tools and algorithms used to just process text. Mm-hmm. And all of those have been bucketed in NLP. And a lot of that is heuristic based. A lot of that is, just having keywords or synonym banks or stuff like that, right? Like very traditional, I would say, computer science.
Right.
And then, as you alluded to, natural language understanding is the kind of next step to that. And once you have these like very simple building blocks for NLP, which can get you pretty far in terms of some applications, you start to build tools that effectively approximate how humans understand and communicate in language. So with NLU, you can start to do things like question answering. So given a document, given a question, what is the answer to this question as it pertains to the document? So it's little things like, hey, John picked up the ball, John went to the store, John put the ball down, and then answering the question, where is the ball? You would need an AI to understand that the ball is in the store based on these sequences of facts. Right. And so, yeah. And so natural language understanding is really, how do you solve these like human cognition problems, from reading comprehension to question answering to information retrieval? And yeah, I really do think we are, as a society, as an industry, just at the cusp, at the beginning of natural language understanding. I would say a lot of it started maybe in 2017, with a few different data sets that were published around question answering and machine reading comprehension. And those were really the first time you had researchers really diving deep into this. And so we, I think at Forethought, have benefited from this really, really subtle but powerful shift in that this was exactly when we were starting our company and we were actually focused on this research. Again, for me, I was thinking about the problem of question generation very, very early on, which is, hey, given text, given notes, how do you generate cohesive sounding questions in order to create quizzes out of them? And it turns out a lot of the techniques I was learning, in high school and college, in order to solve this natural language understanding problem, set me up and set the team up really well to be able to solve more general natural language understanding problems, which in our case was like reading comprehension and and question answering.
And so so I know you're talking about, so it's the answers, the AGATH answers is about, finding and presenting the right sort of information, and predictions is about routing and tagging and routing, classifying, tagging and routing the sort of tickets to the request when, as they come in. And then on your site, it talks about, and you said it to yourself, is that you have all these, there's a big admin chunk of work that needs to get done, or it's done by many kind of teams where people are doing the manual tagging. Now, what I'm trying to understand is that there's an accuracy, but then there's also accuracy benefit, but there's also a productivity benefit here in terms of like time and labor saving. And I'm trying to get an idea of, so what's the kind of, in your estimate and what you're doing your research in terms of the clients that you're working with, what's the kind of potential productivity win here in terms of freeing up of time and effort?
Yeah, absolutely. So as mentioned with AGATH Answers, just in general, we can improve productivity by giving people tools for answers by around 20 to 30% is kind of, what we say on our in our public communications and what we've seen with customers. And then with AGATH Predictions, the kind of routing, tagging, and that piece of things, I would actually say it's another 20%. So what's interesting is, imagine a typical support team. What you'll often have is your best agents will spend maybe, 4 out of the 5 weekdays actually responding to tickets, and then they might spend an entire day just doing triage, right? Mm-hmm. And so basically, yeah, I could imagine you getting, another 20, 25% of your time back with AGATH Predictions, because you don't have to do that. And not only is it, just a time saver, but it's actually usually your best and most tenured agents who spend time triaging, because they know how to catch mistakes and they know how to how the support team should be operating. And so This can be a huge win for teams.
And does that mean then you're also using those agents in the initial stages to actually train the systems as well, so that Or is the system just able to learn from the kind of data sets that are available? How does that work?
Yeah, exactly. So as much as possible, as part of not only are we building a quote unquote machine learning company, but we want to build an experience for our customers. And so as much as possible, we like to kind of remove some of the load from our customers. So we actually prefer not having our agents or our customers train the system. So, there's a few clever things we do in order to make that possible. But the simplest one is, of course, looking at past tickets. So naturally, any team that has a good use case for AGATH Predictions has probably been doing this triaging for at least a few months, potentially years, as the team has been scaling. So what we have is this natural bank of past tickets that have already been labeled. And right. So that's the first data source that we plug into AGATH Predictions, so that AGATH can start to know how to triage like your expert agents have been triaging.
Okay, yeah, because I mean, I think that's the interesting thing about when people talk about implementing new AI-powered or AI-enabled sort of systems, is that it sometimes feels like it's getting sold as, oh, you just plug it in and turn it on and it's fine. And it's kind of just like, ta-da, the world is kind of like a happier kind of place. And what it seems to miss is that there is a requirement around, sometimes there is some potentially manual kind of like heavy lifting that needs to get done in order to train yep. systems. But then there's also a requirement to have, you have to have the right data. And if you don't have the right data, you've got to create the data. And that maybe kind of, it's almost like a, if you've got the data, then you, the system is more likely to be able to train itself with a bit of QA around it, I guess. But if you don't have the data, yep. then you've got to train the system, and that can take time. And I think that's kind of this thing. There is a lot of, it's almost like the guilty secret that's kind of lurking in the background, which basically goes, yeah, this might not be as easy as you think, because there are some essential requirements to maximize the potential of a system like the one that you're developing.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so what's interesting about that is that's one of the things we take great pains to reduce, right? And so we actually think that's one of our differentiators. Mm-hmm. So swinging back to Agatha Answers for a second, because we have this NLU approach, it actually allows for some really interesting things. So an example of kind of the problem you described on the answer side is most AI tools, especially over the past, I would say, half decade, have really been about, hey, you're going to go, you, the agent or the support director, are going to go and create these canned responses. As you said, go and literally create these labeled answers. And then given that, we're going to train our system on that. And so it really forces the director or the agents to go and create these, create the data necessary. Mm-hmm. And that's how most either bots or AI systems have operated in the past. Mm-hmm. But because we have this natural language understanding approach where we've trained our AI on more generalized data sets, English language or whatever language we're deploying for, to understand how humans ask and answer questions. Mm-hmm. When it actually comes time to deploy, we do something called transfer learning. Basically, we take this more generalized model and fine-tune it on a little bit of the data that you already have. And that allows Agatha Answers to be deployed very, very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to create these canned responses as the customer. We're actually going to extract suggested answers based on already written data. So that can be things like your knowledge base articles. We'll extract sentences or paragraphs from there, or your past tickets that have already been answered. We'll look for common threads or themes and then come up with answers from that. And so this is, again, this NLU really fundamentally changes how quickly things can deploy, the fact that we can answer unexpected or complex questions, and really just like alleviates that training hurdle, which is definitely a huge problem in AI.
Could it also kind of help? I mean, because this is the sort of answers and prediction are essentially internal tools right now.
Yes.
It doesn't, I mean, could it be that you could end up using sort of the answers tech to help build out a self-service knowledge base, which is more of an external tool?
Yeah, absolutely.
Would that work? Because almost it feels like you're doing the work internally, but it's actually there mm-hmm. may be that you could almost go, well, we learn about the questions that are coming in, and then the answers part is helping create answers for that. But then that could be almost be captured and repurposed and presented externally.
Yeah, definitely. So this is actually a common feature request we get from our customers. And mm-hmm. so it's something we're thinking about on the roadmap, both from there's a bunch of different ways you can do this. So one, you could potentially make it, you know, instead of just suggesting an answer to an agent when a ticket's opened, you can respond directly to a customer when they open a ticket. And so right. this can be a bit more like a deflection or, I guess a ticket deflection use case. So that's one. And then, yeah, using the kind of AI to suggest where there are gaps in your knowledge base and then create suggested kind of macros or create suggested articles there. What we call gap detection is another. Mm. So there's many, many, many ways that we can take the product. And so a few of these things are, you know, either on our roadmap for 2020 or literally in beta or kind of we're experimenting with right now.
Right.
So we're very excited about that. What I would say, though, is we always, always, always come back to the agent. And so our main goal and really our mission of the company is to enable everyone to be a genius at their job. And so we always decided to build our first products and our first tools for the agents, including Agatha Answers. And then over time, as we see that pieces of the agent's workflow can be, you know, hey, like if you don't have to focus on this anymore, you can focus on something else. Mm-hmm. Then we start to build more of these tools that are less agent focused and maybe more external focused or operational focused. And so that's kind of how we sequence things, because at the end of the day, we truly believe in making your agents into super agents.
Perfect. I mean, that's great. I mean, I like it. So the but let's kind of like let me kind of like ask a different question now, kind of Dion, is that the I know you're early stage. I know you've kind of so a very young company, but do you have a couple of examples of, you know, clients or brands that you've kind of worked with, or even just kind of use cases that you can tell about if they need to be sanitized, as it were, to help describe kind of the, almost like the problem that a company was facing, and how your solution kind of helped and what sort of benefits they you know they saw. Because then that sort of brings it to life, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. So probably I'll do a shameless plug for our website. So we actually do have some case studies on our website and more going up kind of every day. And so that's the best place to see what companies we're working with and kind of the use cases. Yeah, you can find our case studies on our website at Forethought, Forethought.ai.
Perfect.
We partnered with one, you know, unicorn in the local services marketplace to improve their support operations, for example. And so for them, there's a few different use cases. So this company is using our Agatha Predictions product. And basically, anything from, you know, both routing to the right agents and figuring out what team it's on, to things like safety. So figuring out if a user reports that they have an issue in the marketplace, so the person they hired, you know, didn't do the job right or whatever, or they endangered them for some reason, they're sending in tickets. And we can actually detect, you know, separate, okay, is this a spam ticket from, is this actually a ticket that needs to be escalated, and so on and so forth. So this is one example of a use case where Agatha Predictions is actually being embedded within the workflow and then used to route, tag, and triage many, many different cases. And so that's one example of a customer. Other customers using us, again, to figure out escalations. So mm-hmm. One large company in the storage space is using us to detect whether a ticket comes in needs to be escalated to a senior engineer. And so tickets that do not get escalated are pretty simple, but escalations actually cost them thousands of dollars per ticket. And so being able to detect beforehand whether or not it needs to be escalated really saves them a lot of money. And so they're using Agatha Predictions for that. And so there's really, you know, a variety of use cases you could use Agatha Predictions. And then another customer is using Agatha Answers to help their agents respond to questions more efficiently. So they are a large payroll and HR services provider. And, you know, they get questions coming in about payroll. They get questions coming in about taxes. And so their agents have to look up stuff on, like, literally the tax website or internally in their own documents. And so we've indexed all of that, and then we're actually giving their agents suggested answers. So there's a really, really wide variety of use cases where people can use Agatha, the platform, both Agatha Answers, Agatha Predictions, and the tools we're launching. And it really ranges from, you know, simple kind of e-commerce use cases to really complex B2B SaaS, or even things like insurance use cases. So we're pretty excited about the versatility of the engine, and it really goes back to the fact that we are using a natural language understanding approach, which allows it to be very, very versatile.
Perfect. That's great. I mean, the and thank you for that, because that gives us a little bit of, if you like, color to the technology, right? Which kind of sometimes can all feel a little bit kind of vanilla. you know, because you know the terms and technology kind of get talked about, kind of like thrown about all the time, and I sometimes think kind of the meta term artificial intelligence is sort of kind of not helpful, and sometimes it's redundant.
Yep.
Because it just gets thrown about by so many people, and you know it's not this cure-all, it's not penicillin or anything. It's there is much more detail than that. But anyway, given that you're in the thick of it as well, you've been developing this platform, this approach. You're in the thick of it, sort of like kind of in the trenches, really, with the kind of support teams, folks in the call centers. Doing kind of trying to help them be, as you say, geniuses at their jobs, which is great. But given that you have been in the trenches doing this, I mean, it's a really, what I wanted to ask was to get your take on what do you think this sort of the future of service and experience kind of looks like, and kind of what are the, do you think are some of the key challenges ahead, given kind of like you've seen it, right? You've been right in the depths of it, so right now.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, so the industry is changing rapidly. So there's a few changes we're noticing. One is just the channels, right? So we're starting to see a lot of traditional companies are going from phone support to chat, to email support and things like that, to offer kind of a digital channels to their customers, especially mm-hmm. with, you know, the millennial generation. A lot of people don't want to be on the phone, but they still want instant access. So we're seeing a lot of people responding on like social media, on text, on chat, and so on and so forth. So I think that's a big shift for us, particularly as, you know, as a vendor in the space. That actually just means like different aspects of the product that we work on. How do we support things from email to real-time voice to chat? And for the actual companies doing the support, it also changes what kinds of agents and what kinds of training they get. And then the other challenges I would see are the balancing of increasing customer satisfaction with reducing costs. So what I mean by that is traditionally customers support, customer service, customer experience have been known as a cost center within enterprises. And so mm-hmm. they haven't really gotten much love from, say, senior or executive management. But we're actually seeing, especially with the rise of the cloud, the rise of software as a service, the rise of basically subscription-based economies, customer support is now morphing into customer experience, right? And so what that means is we're realizing that what has traditionally been your support team can now actually be responsible for things like retention, can be responsible for keeping your customers happy, which ultimately leads to a much higher lifetime value of the customer for the businesses. And so it's starting to become more forefront in these kinds of modern businesses.
Okay. That's, yeah, that's cool. I mean, and all I say to that is about bloody time.
exactly. Tell me about it, right?
Yeah. So one final kind of question on this sort of stuff, and then before I kind of ask you a couple of just questions to finish off the interview. And that is like, so Dion, if anybody's listening to this, you know, this interview or reading the highlights and stuff, and they're like wanting to improve their service or experience, I mean, what would be your best advice to them? I mean, where should they start? What should they be thinking about?
That's a great question. I think particularly from my lens of AI, one of the things that I would say to them is AI has changed a lot in the past 5 years. Like the technology that we have today is completely different than the technology we had 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then secondly, that I recognize it is kind of a buzzword. So it's very, very difficult to kind of separate wheat from chaff, so to speak.
Yeah.
But I would say if you're doing at least 1,000 to 2,000 tickets a week or more than that, and you have a support team of at least 10 to 15 people, you can start to experiment with different forms of, you know, AI in your customer contact center or in your customer service team. So definitely reach out to Forethought if you are thinking of that. You can always request a demo at forethought.ai. Shameless plug. But yeah. but really though, I think like taking the time to understand the differences between, you know, is it a chatbot you want or is it an agent augmentation tool? Like there is a rich space out there of tools that you can use to augment your team. Mm. And they're actually very, very different despite having the same umbrella word AI. Yeah. So that's the thing I would say is start to explore that and really come at it from like a learning perspective, because it's like it's more nuanced than it sounds on the surface.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I think you're making an important point, because actually there's a lot of people go and buy a whole bunch of stuff without really understanding what it is they want to achieve.
Exactly.
And so it's a bit like, you know, why don't you figure out kind of what is the experience that you want to deliver? And then think about the tools that you need sort of to help you get there. And it's like, sometimes it doesn't feel like that's what's happening, because what we end up is we get a lot of technology that gets bought and then bolted together. And we wonder why, you know, everything feels a bit clunky and customers aren't happy.
Exactly.
Et cetera, et cetera. So because it seems like, I don't know if it's the right word these days. Is that a meme or a trope? I'm not so sure. But you know, everybody seems like, oh, we must have a chatbot. I'm like going, really?
Exactly.
Why?
Yeah. The number of times we've heard that and I think that really is a testament to it's a complex market, both on the vendor side and the buyer side, or if you're a director of customer experience, like being able to figure it all out. Not all AI is a chatbot. I'm actually running a webinar called To Bot or Not in the next couple of weeks. So we're actually going to talk about how do you separate like the different use cases of AI. So like, you know, for some companies having a chatbot is what you need, right? Especially for, I would say, oftentimes airlines or kind of retail e-commerce, you actually just want a rule-based system to decide like, hey, is this a refund request or is it like not a refund request? And that's like the biggest thing you need. But for other companies, say if you are this, you know, a B2B SaaS business or a technology company and you have very complex customers, then you might need another thing. Like you might need an Agatha Answers to tell you, to help your agents kind of troubleshoot problems. And so there's a fun landscape to that. The question of to bot or not is a big one.
Fantastic. So that brings me to the last couple of questions, and these are a bit more fun, Dion. And because it's like, I wrote a book, came out earlier this year, just a couple months ago, came out in June, and it's called Punk CX, because it was born out of, it's sort of the analogy is that punk rock music and emerged out of the back of prog rock music in the 1970s, because it was felt that prog rock was becoming, you know, overly elaborate, self-indulgent, in danger of disappearing up its own arse, kind of more of a very, very exclusive rather than an inclusive sort of fan base experience sort of thing. And punk was like going, what, you don't need a PhD to play music. You just need to know pick up an instrument and learn three chords and write a song. And that's it. And it made me think that I think the customer experience space is looking a lot like prog rock these days. Overly complicated, you know, certified, certified, all the kind of that sort of stuff. And losing sight of the customer in many parts, because customers aren't necessarily getting the experience that they wanted. And I thought, that's interesting. And also because many experience initiatives are not, you know, meeting expectations or hitting their deliverables. And so that made me think, I wonder then if CX is looking a little bit like prog rock, then what would a punk version of CX look like? You know, given that punks dare to be different, to stand out, kind of like to try new things and so on and so forth. And so what I've been doing is I've been asking kind of people that I've been interviewing sort of two things. Given that sort of idea, what one or two words do you think would describe a punk approach to customer experience?
Ooh, one or two words that I think would describe a punk approach to customer experience. Yeah, I mean, off the top of my head, it's augment, not automate, this is another way of thinking about it.
Because
a lot of the traditional technologies, people have been thinking about, you know, bots, people have been thinking about deflecting, automating their team. And it's really like, in my experience, in my belief, is that really, really think about how do you make your agents love their job, and love coming to work every day. And I think that's something that is underexplored.
Mm. Yeah, no, completely.
So that's one.
Excellent. And so following on from that, and so do you think there's any companies, or do any companies or brands come to mind that, when I say punk customer experience, and or who do you think epitomizes that sort of approach or ethos that you have in your head? I'm just trying to, it's just a piece of social research I'm doing, trying to get different people's perspectives.
What company or brand epitomizes punk? Let's see. I don't know. I have a company that randomly comes to mind, and I'm not sure if this is a great example or a very horrible example. And maybe that's why, but Amazon is an interesting company that I would love to dissect, right? Like, they're really, you know, customer focused. Like when my wife buys something on Amazon, like it can be either returned or replaced like instantly. No questions asked. And it's kind of like, I don't know if that's a good long-term strategy. And I also don't know how much, like, I literally don't know. I'm not even questioning it. It's just, I just don't know, but how much they focus on their agents and empowering their agents, how much their agents love their job. So it could go either way. I have no idea, but they're just like an interesting case study in customer support.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think I think different people have got different views on them. They are, you know, I keep telling people this random sort of fact about them. I don't know if you know this, but if you type in relentless.com into a browser, do you know that it redirects to Amazon?
No way.
Yes way.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing. That
sort of tells you everything you need to know about Amazon.
There it is, Amazon, relentless.com.
And I found that out randomly, and I learned it from somewhere else, and I've been telling people, they're like, no. And then they don't believe me, they type it in, they go, oh, so it is. And I do think it is that sort of thing. It's like they are relentless. They are, but then in many ways, they don't overcomplicate things in their own way, and they try things and they'll kill things. But are they the best company? I don't know, but they're fascinating, like you say.
Right, exactly. It is kind of punk. It is like, I don't know if I like this or hate it, but I'm gonna listen, you know.
Well, exactly, and that in of itself makes it punk. It's like going, yeah, we're gonna do this way. You might not like it, but that's tough. We don't care.
That sounds about right, Adrian.
Dion, so I just want to say thank you for that. Thank you for your time and congratulations on your success. Also, finally, absolutely congratulations to you and your wife for your second child that's just arrived kind of a few days ago. So
thank you so much.
Congratulations on your success and the kind of work that you're doing, because I think it feels like it's what you're doing at Forethought is like taking up a level particularly with the use of the NLU sort of approach, which is very different to a lot of stuff that's going on around the place. But yeah, finally, I'm going to stop babbling. Thank you for sharing your time and your experience with us today. That's been great.
Yeah, thank you, Adrian. Really appreciate you having me on the podcast, and yeah, look forward to chatting with you further.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go. Please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.